Haran? Okay. This maimer was delivered by the Rebbe on Shabbos Parshas Vayakel. The year was 1954, Tafshin Yud Dalet. It was a leap year that year. And it was a Mevarchim of Adar Sheni. This year, we're already up to Mevarchim Nisan. And that year, Vayakel and Pekudi were separate. And it's rare we should have a maimer only of Vayakel. An interesting thing about this maimer is that there is a Hanocha. There's an unedited version of it, and the Rebbe wrote on it Malukat, in the Rebbe's handwriting, which means that the Rebbe saw this maimer as a gathering, a compilation of many different maimorim. And he wrote that. It's very interesting. So here's what I'm going to do in order for us to cover some real ground. I'm going to give you a very, very brief synopsis of the first paragraph, and then we're going to study the second and third paragraphs inside, and then I'll try to give you a synopsis of what happens from there afterwards. So Moshe Rabbeinu gathers all the Jewish people together, the Bnei Yisrael, and he says to them, this is what God said. And then he goes on to speak about 6 days of working and resting on the seventh. So the obvious questions here are, didn't he come to speak about the Mishkan? Like, why is he telling you about Shabbos? The whole thing doesn't seem to make any sense. And there's various answers that are given, and the Rebbe is medayik. He analyzes this precisely. He says, yes, it's true that we're learning about the Mishkan and Shabbos at the same time, because both are sacred and both are holy, and Shabbos is not overridden by the building of a Mishkan, like Ramban says. But the Rebbe says, why do we have to emphasize the idea of Sheish Yom Ta'asa Melacha and only afterwards Yom HaShvi? Wouldn't it make more sense for us first to speak about the building and then tell us that despite the building and all how important it is, nonetheless, you still can't work on Shabbos? A whole slew of different precise and exact analyses of the words, interpretation of the Ramban, and the opening volley of the Parsha, and why it would be said in that fashion. And we're not going to get to any of the answers, so that's why I don't want to spend time in it. So the Rebbe says, V'yuvin kol zeh behegdim. This is where the second paragraph picks up, and this is what I want to focus on. So in order to understand how and why the Torah would have used this unusual verbiage, first we have to kind of preface, go back to Klolos Inyan Halamates Malachas. So the idea of Shabbos and the Mishkan is that it would take 39 different categories of work in order to be able to build the Mishkan. And since the Mishkan couldn't be built on Shabbos, Shabbat is to be holy, no work, we understand that anything which is involved in the building of the Mishkan must automatically be a violation of Shabbat. Otherwise, Moshe Rabbeinu would say, we'll push off the Shabbat permissible activities for Shabbat. This way we could be working 7 days a week. We'll work on the 6 days, the things you can't do on the holy day of Shabbat. Now, the day of Shabbat, which is holy, we'll do the things that you can do on Shabbat. But Moshe says, no. No work on Shabbat. Absolute, total cessation. From this we understand that anything and everything that was connected to the building of the Mishkan, the fashioning, the fabrication, the preparation, anything automatically is necessarily going to be prohibited on the holy day of Shabbos Kodesh. And that's where we get the Lametes Malachas from, as the Gemara spends a lot of time proving and deriving and demonstrating how all of this is written. Okay, so the Rebbe says we have to have a broader explanation of the Lametes Malachas. The Hine. Inyan HaMalacha Hu LaHashlem Es Tzeirecha Adam. If you had to define work, so what's work about? What would you say? Some people would say misery. Some people would say keep you busy. What's the Torah perspective on work? Why do people do work? And the answer is because they have to. Because things are missing. Things are missing. If we wouldn't work, we wouldn't have. And therefore, we must work. The work is what we need to do in order to finish or complete or bring to fruition the things we need in life. Lahashlam tzarech adam. So mitzad zeh shehu tzarech le'ezeh davar, because he needs something. So because he needs something, l'chein hu ayseh samalacha. That's why you do the work. So think of the aboriginals who used to live in Canada before the Europeans invaded it and stole their land, and then lectured to Israel about occupying somebody else's land. But that's a subject for another day. So what did the aboriginals do? They did a lot of work. They also had lots of play. What kind of work did they do? Whatever they needed to do. Whatever they needed to do, they did. They had a winter coming. Of course, they lived in Canada. Before the Europeans came, it was also cold. What were they doing for half the summer? Preparing for the winter so they could survive the winter. They needed to eat? Yeah, okay, they needed to hunt. They needed to make sure that there was structures. However, they made the structures with hides and wood. They made the structures. They did what they had to do. Incidentally, they were really good at utilizing everything. They didn't waste. Used everything. Every single detail the animal killed was put to good use. So the point is that doing work is engaged in because we need to finish. We need to complete. We need things. It's like, what's the mother of invention? Necessity. Okay. What's the father of work? What begets work? The need. You need something. That's why you work on it. Because, as a rule, the person's needs are divided into three categories of needs. So because a person's needs are divided into three, which, what are those three needs? What does every person need? Every human being, in order to function normally, needs to have food. Thank you, mazon. What else do you need?
Water.
What, water and food go together. What else do you need? You need shelter. Very good. What else do you need besides shelter? Clothing. Clothing. Food, shelter, clothing. Everybody needs food, shelter, clothing. Food, shelter, clothing, in the language of Torah, is called mazon, levush, and bayis. So mazon, levush, and bayis are what we need. And because mazon, levush, and bayis, because food, shelter, clothing is needed, so that's why the work that's done is in order to have food, shelter, clothing. What would happen if a person say, well, I can afford to eat, I can afford to have clothes, but I can't afford to have a roof over my head? That's a problem. That's missing a basic need. A person without a home is half a person. What if a person says, well, I lucked out, I got a home, but I have no food and nothing to wear, so you can sit naked at home all day? It doesn't work. That's not how a person can live in a normal fashion. So the Rebbe points out something fascinating about the Lama Tos Malachas. There's 39 categories of work, she'inyonam, which, since they're called work by dint of Torah ordination, they're called work. Since they're called work, so then it must be done in order, what? Lahashlim es sarchi ha'adam. If it's work, work is done in order to complete a person's needs. That's what it's work. That's the difference between work and a hobby. The things people do because they have to do, and things people do because they want to do, or enjoy doing, or delight in doing. It's a hobby. It's fun. They don't need to do it. So all of work is in order to attain three things. People who do hobby-like things for work, like maybe playing music, there's some people who play it for a hobby, and some people are playing music to make a living, so that they should be able to afford food, clothing, and shelter. So isn't it amazing that actually the 39 categories of work are divided up, gimel, plugas, elu, are divided up in these three systems, the system of nomenclature. As it says, Tana, the sage in the Mishnah, Sedura de Pasnakat. He talked first of all about what's called the order of bread. The order of bread is not an award you get. The order of bread means all the things that are done in order for a person to be able to eat. So what's the first thing done for a person to be able to eat? The very first thing done. You plow the field. You plow the field. Because if you don't plow the field, you can't plant the field. If you can't plant the field, you can't have anything grow. You'll have nothing to harvest. You don't need to harvest. You have nothing to be able to develop, which eventually turns into bread. So that's where it goes from. Hachoyresh. That's where it starts from. It starts from plowing the field. Hazoreya, the planting. All of this, heim hamalachas b'mazon. That's one category. And then we have the category of clothing. Oive, oireg, spinning wool. We have this idea that you're not allowed to weave. These are malachas of levush. These are malachas. These are works, categories of work, which are connected to clothing. And then we have b'yinev esoyser, building, destroying in order to build. So all of that is called malachas abayis. Now, inasmuch as much of b'yinev might not be dealing with actual building of a house, we could have a halacha about not arranging food a certain way because you're going to be building something. But nonetheless, organically speaking, building is about shelter. So basically, the Lama Tes Malachas, the 39 categories of work, cover the three basic human necessities: food, clothing, and shelter. So to better understand that. Okay, very nice. So the 39 malachas cover the three basic necessities. And just like people need food, shelter, and clothing, that's why, that's how and why the Lama Tes Malachas divide up into the orders of food, shelter, and clothing. So what does that mean? And why is that relevant? Dehine hamazon. Let's define food now. In Yonei, the thing about food is shenichnas bepnimius ba'adam. Food is ingested. That's what food is. You ingest your food. Don't wear your food. Babies wear the food. It doesn't work very well. Don't ingest your clothing. That doesn't work well either. Food is ingested. That's the nature of mazon. And what happens once it's ingested? It's digested. And when it's digested, what do you get? You get koyach. And if your body is strong enough, it gets to hold on to it, the neshama. It keeps body and soul together. What would happen, chas v'shalom, if a person would not eat? And eventually the body would be weakened to the point that body and soul would simply go their own ways. So we eat in order to stay alive. We eat to keep body and soul together. V'hainu. Inasmuch as it is totally illogical to say that the neshama needs Cheerios. Why would a neshama need Cheerios? Why would a soul need roast beef? A soul, a neshama, a piece of God has to eat a piece of meat? Has to chomp on some nutrients? Has to ingest some grain? That doesn't make any sense. It's a neshama. It's the neshama. Why does it need that? So obviously we can't say the neshama needs to be nourished. Just like you can't have, so to speak, energy unless you harness the energy. You'll never be able to isolate a fire in and of itself if you don't have a wick to hold on to the fire. So the soul cannot be effective without a body. It doesn't mean that the soul needs nourishment. How could a soul be nourished by something physical? That's a preposterous thing to say. It makes no sense whatsoever. So why does the soul need food? Well, the soul needs to be tethered to a body. Because if the soul is not tethered to a body, then the soul cannot be effective. It cannot do the mitzvahs. It cannot study the Torah. It cannot make this world a godly place. So the body becomes its vehicle. And in order for it to have a vehicle, the vehicle has to have enough strength to hold on to the bond of body and soul. And that's what we need food for. This is then the purpose of food. It strengthens the body. That the body should be an appropriate vessel for the neshama that enlivens and animates it. At that point, the soul is bonded seamlessly onto the body. Something interesting just happened. Because even though the neshama doesn't need the food, because the neshama can only be connected to the body if the body is fed. Once the neshama is connected to the neshama is enriched by the experience. If the neshama wouldn't be enriched by the experience, then why in heaven would the neshama come down to earth? How is the neshama enriched by the experience? Because it eats fine cuisine? Because it has good rounds of golf? Or watches funny talk shows? How is the neshama energized? How is the neshama elevated by the bodily experience? Because it does a favor for another. Because it performs a mitzvah. Because it makes this world a better place. The neshama couldn't do those things without a body. And kivan shadafka yedei haguf yecholah hanefesh lufel peulasa. Because it's only with a body that this can be done. So because that's the case, he calls mancha who, kolzer who bimazen. All of this is connected to food. Because food is what makes this happen. That food is ingested. Venasa damu basar kibsari. The food becomes bone and plasma, flesh and blood. So this is the business of clothing, of food. Now let's move on to clothing. Amnam inyan halavush. Not only should clothing not be ingested, if the clothing is specifically worn on the outside, you don't try to insert clothing into your mouth or insert clothing into your ears and your nose. That's ridiculous. That's not clothing. If somebody's inserting cotton in their ears, they have a problem. That means there's a lack of health. Clothing is specifically always worn on the outside. It's superficial. It's makif alaf. It wraps the person. In as much as the clothing is superficial, it's on the outside. It wraps him. But it serves to protect the person. You go out in this weather without clothes, not going to be fun. So megin alav michayim u'migshamim, it protects the person from blistering heat. It protects the person from inclement weather and rain. But it's more than that. A human being who doesn't have clothes, rachman al-etzlan, is dehumanized. He has no dignity. What do clothes add for a person? Dignity. Dignity. The Nazis, yimach shemam, was the first thing they did to dehumanize us. Took away our clothes. Took away our clothes. All right, fine, you got to wear something. It's too cold outside. They gave us these ridiculous, hideous-looking pajamas. They took away our clothes. People express themselves through clothes, the way they dress, style, fashion, shtick. Clothing says a lot about a person. Clothing gives a person dignity. So the clothing, even though it's not so, so to speak, internally minded, it's not something that becomes a part of you, but it has a big effect on you. It's poil b'yoifi. It brings out, so to speak, beauty. U'kumayim erazal, like the statement of our sages, which is made in the Gemara of Shabbos itself, the ikri le'lamana, that one of the sages called his clothes mechabdusa. Mechabdusa is a permutation of the word kavod, which means honor or dignity. So the honor and dignity of a person, that's the clothing a person wears. So that's a big deal. It's a big deal. You could be alive, but have no dignity. You can be alive, you have no comfort. You're frozen. You're boiling. You feel like an animal. You've been robbed of your dignity. Now you have food. Now you have clothing. You have both life and dignity. Ach omnam inyan habayis, the home, shelter, mechutz lagamri lahaadam. That's totally at bay. It's totally at a distance. So the clothing is on the surface, but at least you wear the clothing. It's close to your body. In fact, the clothing's got to fit you. If the clothing doesn't fit you at all, it's a problem. Nobody wears a tent. So, v'humakif, but the home doesn't fit you. Nobody wears the house. The house is bigger than they. It's makif yeser rochik. It surrounds you, but from a greater distance. Ach, gam habayis megin al adam. Just like clothing protects the person, the home also protects the person. What would happen if you wouldn't have a home to go to, rachman al-san? You'd be homeless in this kind of weather? Bad news. Habayis humachsa, this home is shelter, mizerum umimotar, from inclement rainfall or snow. I mean, it doesn't say snow here, but I'm Canadianizing it. V'gam pael b'yefi. A person also has a home. I feel like a mensch. A person has dignity. Where do you live? This is my house. A person has a nice home. They feel good about themselves. K'mesh Kosov, like it says, Yishayo Anovi, he gave ear to this idea in the following manner. He said, Tiferes Odom Leshevis Boyes. It's the glory, it's the honor, it's the dignity of a person to have a home, a place to call home. A person who doesn't have a place to call home, they have no dignity. They're like a nobody. There's an interesting story told by the American chaplain. No, sorry. This is an American soldier who later was recruited by the Sochnut or Haganah, whatever it was, to be involved in the Brecha, in the largest movement of people kind across the European continent ever in modern history. Secretly, where they moved this enormous amount of Jews, several hundred thousand Jews who moved across Europe, trying to smuggle them into the land of Israel, because the British were very friendly to us and said, oh, you survived the Holocaust? That's tough luck. Go back to Celts. Figure it out there. So now we want to go home to Israel. Nah, I can't go home. So it took, of course, 3 years till the British finally backed off. But anyway, there's this enormous movement of people, moving people across the European continent, everything beneath the radar. It's called the Brecha. So anyway, this American soldier is now recruited and he's working for them, and he's relating the story of how one night he's emptying a truck of humanity onto a ship that's going to set sail to go to Israel. And he's literally throwing the people, because first of all, it's in the dark. They're afraid of the authorities. And the people are like sacks of potatoes. And he's like hurrying them off. They're whispering, everything has to be. And one man says, as he's being manhandled, says to this young American, he says to him, I was once also a person. Mm-hmm. I once also used to own a home. And then this American, I mean, I heard him tell the story, he's 80, he's a kid. Mm-hmm. He says, it struck me suddenly that the only difference between me and this Holocaust, this concentration camp survivor was, I happened to be born in America. and he had the unfortunate luck of being born in Hungary. Like, that was the difference between the two. He said, I'm not any better, I'm not any different, I'm a Jew. It would have put me in the concentration camps too. But I never forgot those words. It struck me, he said, Ich bin euch ein Mensch, he said. I also used to be a human being once upon a time. I also used to have a house. So a person without a house, it's not that he doesn't feel human. He don't feel like a mensch. A refugee is a horrible status to be in. Homelessness, terrible thing. Forget it, it's not just a technical, physical thing. It's an emotional thing. It's a person who's robbed of dignity. So now we see how the three basics of human existence, which are much more than just technical. The Rebbe just explained this now. He gave us a little more of appreciation and a more of a mystical, a philosophical level of what these three elements mean, and this is all reflected in the Lamed Tes Melachos. Behine. Afsha ha-mazon hu b'pnimius, even though that food is something which is more internal, ingested, and levush u'bayis, both clothing and home are what's referred to in Hasidic syntax, makifim. Makifim means that which is around, surrounds. Mikol makam yesh maila b'levush u'bayis al ha-mazon. There is a towering virtue to the home and clothing vis-a-vis the food. Even though the food is very personal, you ingest the food, it becomes a part of you. Hine, afsha inyan ha-mazon hu shenichnas b'pnimius ha-adam. Even though food, the nature of food is that it enters the person. It binds, it connects body to soul, which is a very profound accomplishment. That's very real, that's very powerful. What can be revealed through food? What can food unlock? Food can only unlock what we call keiches hagiluyim, or the revealed aspect of, revealing perhaps latent, but nonetheless obvious abilities of the soul, the ability of the body to stay alive. Shebechlalos hu bechinas nefesh ruach neshama. It affects the outer layers of the soul, or the superficial layers of the soul, the lower layers of the soul, the layers of the soul which are embodied in a corporeal reality. Known in Chassidus and Kabbalah as Naran, right? It's an acronym, nefesh ruach neshama. Hainu, sha'amazinu kli lebchinazu, that the mazin is an envelope for this level. It's an envelope for the idea of the concept of nefesh ruach neshama. Avala makifin shol nefesh, the higher parts of the soul, we're going to call the aura, the halo, the atmospheric reality of the soul, the area, the part of the soul which is not contained in the specific frame of nefesh ruach neshama. Lo mizgala ma'idei mazin, that's not impacted through food. A person who eats well, it doesn't have dignity. Dignity is an aura. It's an aura thing. It's not being satiated. A person could be sated and have zero dignity. He could be laying like an animal in the straw. He could have eaten food. He could be sated. His body and soul are together. The body is physically strong, but he doesn't have an ounce of humanity about him. Because he has no home. He has no clothing. He's naked like an animal. So this doesn't affect that those higher, loftier parts of the neshama. Lihiyesh ein shayach ben kelim. Because food is all about the keli. It's all about the envelope, the convention. The body is an envelope for the soul, and it can only deal with things which are very technical, limited. Like food is a chemical thing. So what can food do? Food can do what food can do. It can't do anything else. It can't give you dignity. Can't give you a sense of self worth. How can food do that? Food can just fill your belly. That's all it can do. Just give you strength. Can't do anything more than other than that. Achalavush. Shehumakif, the clothing which is on the outside, hu magia gam lemakif in the nefesh. The levush, the clothing, actually touch and impact on the halo, on the atmosphere, on the loftier, higher level of the soul, the aura of the soul. Shezehu shalavush pel yefi badim. That's where the levush brings out beauty in a person. You know, say the people different colorings, they wear different colors, or there's different styles or cuts of clothing that fit them better. The inyan ha-yoyfi hu b'chinas makif. The idea of yoyfi, that's makif, that's on the external, hainu his galus v'kishr ha-nefesh, ayde chizik ha-guf shenase mitzapulis ha-mozen. That means the strengthening of the body that happens through food. It's the inyan pnimi, it's very internal. Aval inyan ha-yoyfi hu b'chinas makif. Beauty, charisma, grace, aura, this is on the surface. This is not inside. Omnam gam ha-vush shepel yoyfi. But even the clothes, so moving on to clothes, affect the person, gives him dignity, gives him aura. But even that aura is yoyfi sheba adam the beauty of a person, it's still ba'adam gufa. It's in the person. It's in the person themselves. The person says, "Oh, you're looking. You look at the clothes. You look really good today. You dress sharply." When someone says "looking good," they're referring to the clothes you're wearing. So, behind shu b'chinas hamakef hashayech el pnimi. It's still about you. It's still about the keli. It's about the envelope of the body or the footprint that you're able to engender, which is makef of what's called chaya. We said nefesh, ruach, neshama, naran, and then there's naran, then there's chaya. Chaya is the fourth atmospheric kind of aura level of the neshama. That fourth aura level of the neshama, that's, so to speak, one step a little bit removed. Aval hayoyfi v'teferes shematzad habayis. The beauty, the glory, the dignity, which is affected by the virtue of a person's home. This is like teferes ha'adam l'sheves bayis. I know a yoyfi eini be'adam gufa. It's not the person looks good. So, oh, you look good in that house. You can't look good in a house. Li'es makef ha'rochik. This is much more atmospheric. It's not shayach l'apnimi. It doesn't, so to speak, permeate the inner track or rhythm of a person's existence, but it's his galos ha'makef t'yichida. This represents the highest, the largest footprint of a person's neshama, the aura of the neshama, what's called yichida. So we talked about food, clothing, shelter. We talked about what that means. We defined these ideas. We talked that we showed how it's found in the Lamatas Malachas. We divided up the Lamatas Malachas and explained the deeper meaning of these three things. And then we explained why food seems to be very personal, whereas the clothing is less personal and the home is more distant. So we would think it's less virtuous. So the Rebbe comes along and says, well, actually not so. In some way, there's a unique part of the home. There's a part of having a house that touches a person that no amount of food, no matter how tasty it is, can ever accomplish. No matter how nutritious it is, it still doesn't give you dignity. It still doesn't give you a sense of self-worth. The person could be starving. Nebuchadnezzar's people were redeemed, were saved from the camps, liberated. They had no clothing. They had no home. What would they think about? As one survivor once told me, he says, the first thing we thought about, I said, what was the first thing you thought about? Family, home? He says, no. So what? He says, food. Just food. It's all we could think about was food. It's all we thought about all day was food. That we're driven insane by hunger. He says, that was the companion that didn't leave me for 4 years. So what was that? He says, hunger. And this is people died. Thousands of people died in the first day of liberation. Why? Because they ate too much. Couldn't pace themselves. Because food is available. So the idea of food is it puts body and soul together. It doesn't give you dignity. It doesn't, so to speak to or elevate the higher consciousness, in the elevated state of a person's human existence. And this is affected by clothing, and even more so, on a more distant level, by a home. So there, and this is the reason that there's big differences between food, clothing, and shelter. As we see, mazon eini machzik zman rav. How long could food last? How long could food last? A month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. At some point, it gets rancid. Can you? And then hudaver yom b'yomei. When it came to the man, when would the food fall? Daily. As they say, proverbially, the daily bread. And food is also cheap. You don't need a mortgage to buy lunch. Food is food. If you need a lot of money to buy food, it's a problem. That means that people can't survive. Mashenk and halavoshu b'yeker. Clothing is more expensive. Umachzik zman rav yeser. Your clothing doesn't last a day. Nobody wears disposable clothing. It doesn't even last a year. It lasts for years. And then habayis hu b'yeker yeser. For the home, people take a mortgage. Very few people can actually afford the home. And this is something that lasts for a long time. A home can last you a lifetime. The tama dover, the reason is liyesham mozen upnimi. The food is, so to speak, internal. And therefore it's madrega p'chusa, it's a lower level. A lower level can't last as long. Halavusha bayis and makifim, that's what's called in Hasidus makifim, which means it surrounds us, because it surrounds us. So therefore, it has, it's more expensive, and it lasts much longer. Clothing, getting into the details, clothing is the thing which hugs us closely. And so that's less expensive and doesn't last as long. The house is the idea of what's further away, and therefore its dynamics are different as well. So these are the three ideas of mazon, bayis, and levush. And of course, the rest of the Maimer talks about how this translates into the Mishkan and how it talks about, you know, the basics of human necessity and so on and so forth. But at any rate, you have a little bit of insight into the basics of human necessity, how we view it, and how and why Shabbos is about how a person is elevated from attaining these things, because on Shabbos, everything is taken care of. You don't need to worry about basic necessities and needs. On Shabbos, we're able to focus on the spirit and the soul. Anyway, with this, good Shabbos, everybody. And let us move on. Thanks for joining us.